Hey, this is Jeremy. Just wanted to hop on before the episode started with a few announcements. We really want to hear from you, and perhaps the best way to do that, we actually have a subreddit now. It's just r/polyphonicpress, and I'll leave a link to it in the show notes. But it's always been my dream to have a community where we can all get together and talk about the albums that we review and just music in general. So if you want to join the community and start the community, really, because it's quite small right now, it's just r/polyphonicpress. And you can always help out the show in various ways. You can check out our Patreon and get these episodes the day before that they go live, and leave a rating and a review on Apple Music or Spotify or wherever you're listening. Those are great ways to get in touch with us as well. That's it. I just wanted to say that. And now on to the episode. Thank you.
This is Polyphonic Press, the podcast where two music fans pick a classic album completely at random. Using the patented random album generator, they are given an album to review from a curated list of over 1,000 classic releases, spanning multiple genres. And now onto the show. Here are your hosts, Jeremy Boyd and John Van Dyke.
All right, hey, welcome to Polyphonic Press. I'm Jeremy Boyd.
And I'm John Van Dyke.
And let's not waste any time. We've got the patented random album generator right in front of us. So let's hit the button and see what album we're going to be listening to this week. And the album we're going to be listening to is Eric's Trip, Love Terra.
Oh, that's Can Con, I do believe. Eric's Trip, I think they're one of those bands that was sort of in the same scene as, like, Sloan and
okay, cool.
I believe that's so.
But a Canadian indie rock band from Moncton, New Brunswick. Eric's Trip achieved prominence as the first Canadian band to be signed to Seattle's flagship grunge label Sub Pop in the early 1990s. The band had a minor hit in alternative circles with the single Viewmaster from the 1994 album Forever Again. So Love Terra is the full-length album by Canadian indie band Eric's Trip.
What year is this one from?
1993.
Okay, so it's before their big hit. Or maybe it's the hit became a hit after. Sometimes that happens in Canada, where an album comes out, and then the year later, a single will actually hit.
So there really isn't anything on allmusic.com, but this is what it says on Wikipedia. Says it was their first release on Seattle's Sub Pop record label and their second not independently released, as well as the first album by a Canadian act to be released on Sub Pop. The album was self-recorded in 3 months and reflected Sub Pop's shift toward lighter, more melodic music from the grunge on which it initially built its reputation. Though the lo-fi quality of the record threw many listeners and critics off, it was still very well received in both Canada and the United States. The critical reception, Mike Bell of the Calgary Herald praised the album as simplistic, charming, front porch folk pop with melodies that stick like a grade school tongue onto a flagpole or rock riffs that sound like a dysfunctional Partridge Family jamming in the garage. okay, cool. So, let's see. So, there's 15 songs on the album. There's no side one, side two. So, what we'll do is we will listen to the first 7 songs.
Okay. And then finish off with 6?
And then finish off with 6, yeah.
Okay.
And so, if you're listening along, the album starts off with the song Behind the Garage, and we'll take a break at song number 7, which is Sunlight, and then we'll discuss halfway through. So it was released on November 9th, 1993. Genre is indie rock, lo-fi, and grunge. Label Sub Pop, produced by Eric's Trip and Bob Weston. So, here we go. Here's the first song called Behind the Garage. Okay, ending the first half of the album with the song Sunlight. So at first I didn't like it. I'm just going to say it.
It was starting to... It sounds unfinished.
Exactly. It sounds like a demo.
Yeah, it does, in a lot of cases. A little bit less so when it comes to... Well, Secret for Julie was probably the best produced song so far. I liked Follow, although, again, it was very muffled. Sunlight was really good.
Yeah, I liked that one.
Yeah, it was pretty good. Anytime You Want was all right. Yeah, I know Stove was actually covered by Sloan.
Yes, it was.
Their B-sides and rarities stuff. So it's kind of out there somewhere. But yeah, it needs, I don't know, it still needed a little bit, like, I know it's grunge, it's not supposed to be too polished.
Yeah.
But this is really unpolished.
Well, I mean, when you think about, yes, it is very unpolished. And when you think about, like,
Nirvana or Sloan's first album or whatever, they sound more complete.
Yes, it's still, like, Nirvana's first, well, the second album, Nevermind. They worked with a producer, Butch Vig, and they managed to have this really polished sound, but still, it still feels like hard rock. It still feels like a punk rock album. It has this sheen on it, but it still captures the energy of the band.
Yeah, exactly. What you do is you sort of like, you level everything off. You make sure nothing's like buried too deep in the mix and something like that. But you don't touch, or you touch very little, the actual sounds that the band is producing.
But I would also say with this, some of the structure of the songs could use some work too.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it's not just the recording. It's some of the structure of the songs could do with some editing as well.
No, I agree. Some of the songs, again, they sound like ideas that they kind of just put down. I mean, it'd be kind of demo that I think would pique people's attention, but I'm having a hard time accepting it as like a finished album.
Exactly. Yeah. And I get that it's lo-fi, but the thing is, I've heard lo-fi before and I enjoy it. And it's like, I can't really hear the bass in here. Like, even the other lo-fi music that I've heard and that I like, you know, you can still hear everything. And, you know, even the last song, Sunlight, yeah, it was a good song, but, like, the guitars were so loud, they were overpowering the vocals. I could barely hear the vocals.
Yeah, there's a lot of hard-to-hear vocals. Again, that's when I thought Secret for Julie was the best produced one, because you could actually hear what she was singing. It might just be her, too.
Well, that's true, yeah. So, like, I get that it's lo-fi, I get that it's grunge, I get that it's like an indie thing and everything like that, but it's...
There's ways to execute it that are...
Yeah, it sounds like a home recording, it sounds like a demo, it doesn't sound like a finished thing, it doesn't sound like... Like the other lo-fi music that I think of, like, is stuff like the Brian Jonestown Massacre and things like that. And that stuff is still, you know, pretty underproduced. But again, it's like, it's still mixed well. It's still, they're not adding a bunch of effects. They're just really mixing, but it's still, everything's balanced.
And they're mixing, but they're not interfering.
Exactly. Yes. Yeah. And so I feel like, although these songs have energy, and I kind of, so, and well, it's hard for me to connect with the music because it's hard to really hear everything. And so that's the challenge that I'm having.
That's kind of where I was too. Some songs I can, like Sunlight, it was actually had me like boogieing a little bit, so I thought it was pretty good.
Well, the drums in that were cool.
The drums in that one were actually excellent. The vibe is very much like a Sloan demo, because it just has that sort of sound. Like, a lot of those Canadian bands just had a certain sound in that period, that grunge, the early grunge sound, specifically out of the East Coast of Canada, just had a certain sound.
I wonder, I'm curious about their other albums and what else like they put out, but like this is, I don't know. So yeah, so we'll I guess we'll move on to the second half of the album. And so it's it'll start off with the song June. So so here we go. Okay, ending the album with Allergic to Love. It's more of the same of just feeling like a demo or something that's not quite
finished. I find like some of the songs, like the best produced ones, that maybe if the rest of them were up to the same standard as those ones, it might be a little bit easier to get behind for me. But I still think some of the songwriting needed a little bit more work too. So,
it feels like a home recording. It feels like it feels like a new band, like a high school band, recording like their first time recording.
Yeah,
it has that kind of feel to it. Like they don't really know what they're doing. They rented some equipment to record something, and you know, it's just something that they recorded because they have some songs that they've written, and it feels very, very much like that. It feels very inexperienced. It feels like they did it themselves. It doesn't feel like something you would necessarily put out as an album.
Yeah, that's sort of what I feel like. It's again, it's not like the most terrible thing I've ever heard, but it's really, really underpolished. And I'm one of these people, I'm not really crazy about a lot of things that are overproduced either, but this is underproduced.
Exactly, yeah. I always do this, and if I were producing them, I would say, okay, there's some really good ideas for songs here. Let's have a pre-production meeting and pick. And the other thing too is there's 15 songs here, and usually when a band is going in to record an album, they always will record more than what they're going to put on the album. And so they'll record, like, let's say an album, the finished album has 12 songs. They'll probably record like 15 or 16 and choose and leave off some of the weaker ones. And then they'll put out the album proper that has the best stuff, or the songs that they feel are the strongest. And I feel like because there's 15 songs here, they probably could have trimmed off. If I were recording them, I would say, okay, let's record all 15 songs properly in a studio. Then let's go and pick out like the best 10 or 12 songs, and that will be the album.
Yeah. Some of the songs, I think some of them are ideas that need to develop. I didn't mind the sort of like home recording sort of vibe it was giving, but I still think that it could have been a little bit more, just get the balancing right and stuff like that, and make sure you can actually sort of hear things. Like, they could leave in all the background noises that they did, and none of that bothers me. That's just part of the art, think. It's almost like an art project, but I think part of the reason why they put everything on here is because a lot of them are just really short. But again, they're sort of like just underdeveloped ideas. I don't know what June was. That was a very strange. I couldn't really hear what they were doing, and then it just sort of turned into hissing noises.
Hissing. Yeah, it was like a conversation or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The strumming in a conversation. But that's fine. Like, I don't mind little bits like that, but if the whole album seems to be mostly comprised of bits like that, and you need more fully developed song ideas, then you can throw things like that in between and stuff like that, and it doesn't really hurt you in the end.
Right. But if you're relying on that then to fill out the album, then yeah, I get what you're saying. Yeah. So the question then is, would you listen to this again?
I know a lot of people are gonna probably say that we need to, but I don't know if I would.
Yeah, I don't think I would. I don't think I would. I am curious to hear their other stuff and see where they progressed, just out of sheer curiosity. But maybe if seeing how they progress, I could go back and listen to this
and sort of put it
in context.
Yeah.
But as a standalone, after this first listen, I don't think I would. I don't think I would. I don't think this would. If someone were showing me this and saying, "Oh, you got to check out this band," and they put this on, I don't think I would. I would listen to it again. No, I don't think I would. I would pick up that recommendation.
Yeah, it's definitely an odd one.
Yeah,
that's all right.
Things are allowed
to be odd.
Exactly. Yeah, and you know, if you're listening to this and you like this album, that's cool too. But yeah, I guess we'll end the show there. Thank you so much for listening. If you made it this far, you can go to polyphonicpress.com. You can drop us a line there and just say hello. And you can check out a bunch of cool stuff there. And if you feel inclined, you can help us out on Patreon. Go to patreon.com/polyphonicpress. You can get a shout out at the end of these episodes. You can get these episodes a week before they go live. And you can even pick an album for us to review. And there's a bunch of cool stuff there. And so, yeah, I think that's pretty much it. I'm Jeremy Boyd.
I'm John Van Dyke.
Take it easy.